Hello, one and all. Can you hear me? Thank you. Francis, how's everything down under? I want to go to Australia one of these days and see if it's true that my blood will rush to my head. Warmer? Want to take a guess what the temperature is where I live? We had a little bit of a cooling trend today. It was only 104. That's degrees Fahrenheit for those of you who live in a world of Celsius. Oops, hang on a second. Something went on with my headset. I don't know what it was. Yeah, it gets a bit warm. Shabbos was 111. It was 111 on Shabbos. That's crazy. Just insane. Well, hello, one and all. Ooh, Francis is in black. Was she in black last week? Yeah, it was pretty long. I mean, you kind of sit under. She has a new hat. Oh, how very nice. Definitely. Well, anyway, welcome everybody to wonderful Noah Chat. I'm your guide for tonight, lack of a better term. 82 in Tulsa. Wow. And if anybody has any questions before we get started, I'd love to entertain them now. Anybody, did they erase my whiteboard picture? I don't see it. I can't get over there. Any questions? No questions? You mean I explain all this stuff so well you have no questions at all? Wow. Not yet. Oh, great. Any questions with last week's Torah portion? It was a double Torah portion. This week we're in the book of just good. Oh, not that good. This week we start the book of Deuteronomy, aka Devarim. No questions. Wow, that's pretty cool. Well, the book of Deuteronomy starts, and can I touch on reincarnation? What would you like to know? That is a huge topic. What's with the red payas? I got red payas. Give me a break. What do you mean? Anything on reincarnation? The word you're looking for is. That's what it is in Hebrew. Gilgulim. A gilgul is a tire. You know, kind of goes around, around, around. There is a lot of discussion on how many times we come back. I'm of the school that it's four. Some people will say it's five. Some people will say it's more. I'm of the school that. Oh, sorry. There, it's all gone. And it is believed I think we went over this before. If you take a look over on the whiteboard side, let me get my pencil. Oh, wait a second. Let me get my face out of here. I'm gonna move myself to some place where I see what's going on. Who's doing the clicks? Okay, that's the wifey. So this. We've gone over this before, right? Boy, it's hard to write on this thing. Okay. This is the four-letter name of God. Okay. So what you have is you have your first time you come in here. See, from heaven down to earth. Then depending on your deeds, go this way or this way with the plan of making it to here and back up. We know that people reincarnate. Do Gentiles reincarnate? Answer is very simple. Yes. How do we know that? Because one incarnation was a person by the name of Noah. Noah was charged with saving a planet, right? Noah was charged with saving a planet. He ended up saving two of every animal, seven of every kosher animal, and his family, right? There are some schools of thought that he came back. Oh, I'm going to put that in the fridge for me because I got my. If I drink that, I'll be going all night. That was his last Gilgal, some people have said, and this is some schools of thought. Moses was the fourth and final incarnation. Came back and was charged to save a people, and was successful if he went. Okay? Noah was not a Jew. That's very obvious. Moses was not a Jew. Moses was a Hebrew. Okay? Jew is really a misnomer. Is somebody from this tribe. Okay? My grandfather, may he rest in peace, when he would fill out an application, put himself down as this. I do that whenever I can. That's just what the family does. I'm not a Jew, I'm a Hebrew. Jews from the tribe of Judah. But that's not how the world views it, so. Wow, someone's hot rodding down the street. So did I answer your question? I don't know who asked me that. Was that Alan who asked me that? Did I answer your question? No, he did not. He wasn't a Jew. Noah was not a Jew. He was the righteous, he was the best God could find of his generation. Okay? Yeah, you can't have a Jewish soul. I mean, Jews have a Jewish soul. Noah wasn't a Jew. Moses was Hebrew. Of course he did. Yes, he did. Fell short of Abraham. I don't understand. Don't forget, we have to. When you ask a question, your sentences need to have subject and predicate. That's the old teacher in me. Sorry. Fell short. Noah fell short of Abraham. You had to be more specific than that. In what way did he fall short, in your opinion? At the time, Noah was the best God could find in the generation. Hey, Chesed, come on, there's other people in there watching what you're typing. I know what you're saying, but you got to consider your audience, you know? Well, Mavis Beacon teaches typing, okay? Can a Gentile reincarnate as a Yid? Well, there's an interesting question. Okay, you guys always stick me in the corner and want my opinion. My opinion really is, it's a very good question, Bob. My opinion is secondary to the things that I teach. I really rather quote minds greater than myself. I read out of the Divine Code. I know there's people out there, oh, that rabbi reads out of the Divine Code. I do read out of it, but I also explain it from a point of view of my studies. A Gentile reincarnated as a Jew. A little on the complicated side. I personally believe that somebody who's truly not a Jew will have almost impossible time converting. My humble opinion, my honest opinion is people who convert to Judaism are people that end up, Jewish soul, end up in the wrong body, the wrong place. And what they are, the people who say they are converts, the people who are coming home. I do believe that. So if you are truly a Gentile, you would have a nearly impossible time to convert, and I would not urge it. If you are a Jew and you need to come home, it's like a salmon swimming upstream. You will do almost anything to get there. And literally, you will do anything to get there. Okay? Did that answer your question? Yeah, there you go, Oki. Noah, through righteousness, was not as righteous as Abraham. Completely different world. The world was so different under Noah's time. Noah was a very, very different man than Abraham. Abraham was very, very different. Yeah, there's a lot to that. There's a lot to that. Anybody else? What else? Powerade, blue, yummy. Moses was Noah until Sinai. Everybody was. We follow those laws, of course. And after Sinai, we got a whole bunch of more laws, and the rest of the world have seven. Noah was called a righteous man of his generation, Francis, yes. No, because Larry, technically a yid is really another way of saying it. It's kind of Yiddish. You're looking for the word Jew. A person of the tribe of Judah, they call a Jew. Okay? So as we know, prior to Moses' time, Judah was one of the sons, not firstborn, but got that right because of what Reuben had done, and we went over that some time ago when we were talking about Genesis and Reuben moving his mother's bed in. It's that whole makloisis, that whole balagan, that whole mess that went on. So what you have is you have a person by the name of Judah whose offspring people later called Jews, Jew of the tribe of Judah. Also, in the time before this collapse of the Second Temple, that whole era, you had the chunk of land that was around that area was Judah's portion. So that part down south was Judah's portion, and people who lived in Judah were called Jews. The proper term, which I wish a lot of people would use, but seeing how they don't, I'm not going to go try and change the world, is technically we're Hebrews. That's what we were called. And there's a whole discussion of where the name Hebrew came from, etc. So that's just there's a ton. I read in a book somewhere, once upon a time, I think one of the strangest origins of the word Hebrew was a derivation of the word Abrew, which is an old Sanskrit word for dusty ones. So the first Hebrews were actually referred to as Abrews because we took donkey caravans out of Ur, out of the Chaldees, that entire area, and came through and down the Phoenician coast, etc. So there's a whole history section of the origin of the name. I've read a ton about where it's come from, who said this, who said that, but find a book, read it. If it bodes well by you, use that one. Reincarnation brings up questions of root soul, including that of Noah if he becomes Moses. What's a root soul? I think we call it a neshama klalus. We call it I think the word that we use is a general soul. Neshama klalus. A general soul was part of the 600,000 that were at Sinai. And Jews today, when during Pesach, we say we remember that we were there because we have a piece of that general soul which is within us. That general soul that was there at Sinai heard the first two commandments. I think somebody with our shard of soul that we have today, had they ended up in Mount Sinai, I don't think would have survived the ordeal. Bob, that answer your question? And I do understand there's a lot of people out there that's downloading our classes and all that, and they kind of take a look at what I'm wearing, and this is a around the house t-shirt I wear, long sleeves and all that good stuff. Got a pocket in it and all that groovy in my tzitzit. And some people, it is a good, it's comfortable. I mean, it's 111 degrees out. So, you know, I wear a coat and tie, I'd roast. And there's some people out there that have had some issues with what I wear on my head. There is a tremendous amount of discussion where the origin of the yarmulke came from and what it is and what it means. Okay? I have been teaching in one form or another for over 35 years. I have 5 advanced degrees, and one of them is a PhD in education. I also have a couple of smichas, working on a third. And there are people out there who say, look at this guy, look what he's wearing, all this junk. Well, I tell you what, my purpose is to teach a room full of righteous Gentiles that are simply trying to do the right thing and trying to learn what the right thing to do so that they end up not getting or not making the big guy mad. So the purpose is to teach this class in such a way that you will glean very good information from this, and so the title of Righteous Gentile will stick. Those people out there that take a look at this video and, you know, fold their arms across their chest and point at me and say, what's that rabbi wearing? Well, guess what? If you would like to come into this class and take the microphone and do what I do, bring it in, bring it on, bring it about. But just to let people know, because I've heard these things floating around, and I like what I'm doing. I think you people are some of the coolest people I ever met. What my wife and I are doing, we do because we enjoy you immensely. And all we want to do is help you people do the right thing. Okay? So there are people out there who have issues with the way I look. Maybe I'll show up in uniform one of these days, only when it gets to be below 90 degrees out. And that way they can say, oh, he looks like a rabbi now. Okay? What? No, they like my do-rag. I'm wearing my do-rag, and these people have a stroke over it. Oh, look at this guy wearing a do-rag. He's such... It's not about me, guys. It's about the content. It's about this. It's about Torah, you know? It's not about me. Okay? Very simple. You're inviting us to your house to teach us, so you should wear what you'd normally wear around the house. I'm not touching that comment at all. that was good. Yeah, actually, I'm in my study. See, my picture's behind me. I love my pictures behind me. This is Thomas Cole's. For if you go to the National Gallery of Art and you look for The Voyage of Man, those are the four prints that I had framed, oh, about 25 years ago. Yeah, but I'm the one on camera. Okay, this has been a hoot. Any other questions? I like you guys a lot. I respect everything that you're doing. The emails that I have gotten recently, the fact that you're a rabbi who is willing to teach us means more than anywhere on your head. It is. Yeah, that's it. That's, okay, I could not have said that more eloquently. And for the people out there who download this video and go, oh, look what he's doing. Okay, whatever. Okay? I have fun with what I'm doing. I enjoy this. If I didn't like it, I wouldn't do it. Okay? Yeah, I enjoy it. Yeah. So, anyway, bottom line is I like being here. I am doing this because I personally feel it's the right thing to do. There is a slow and steady solidification of the Noahide movement. I can see the questions that are being sent to me, the people who ask questions in this room, and the comments. It seems like there's getting to be more of a peace within the Noahide community. And I'll tell you what I have seen, granted, there's some nut jobs out there. But in general, I have seen some amazing stuff. I recently have been... over the last 3 days, I've been corresponding and I've been corresponding with a guy from the Philippines. And believe me, English, I think, is his third language. It's a little bit hard to decipher. But what I found out, and I didn't know this, but there is a group of B'nai Noach in the Philippines. Go figure. So I Googled it. I searched around. I sent him a link to that. There's a Chabad house in there. And I Googled that, and I sent him some information. He also says he wants to be Jewish. He's got a long ways to go. My suggestion to him was to learn the seven laws first, get a local teacher, and start studying. I invited him to class, and we'll see what happens. I don't know. So I heard from them. I'm in correspondence with a person from the Netherlands, which... I have contacted my rabbi, and I've got I've got to forward him an email when he's got a few minutes. Okay, who's playing following the bouncing ball? You got a rabbi with ADD and you got a bouncing ball. It's got to be Chesed. It's got to be Chesed. Thanks, Rabbi. I know it's a long discussion, but you gave me a general idea. Not a problem. Chesed, knock it off. I bet it is him. It's got to be. Oh, Rabbi, look at the pretty blue ball. It's got to be Chesed. He's the only one that would do that to me. See, look at this. Oh, could be Frances. She's got a new toy. Okay, any other questions before we get going? It's not you. It's got to be Chesed then. He's jacking with the rabbi. I am going to... God bless you. That was my wifey. I'm going to discuss a little bit out of the Book of Devarim. And ask him to behave. I've been studying with that guy for a couple of years now, and we have a pretty good rapport. He's a lot of fun, and he's one person in this room that if I give a huge ration to, I do it out of loving kindness. It's a lot of fun. We have been around for a while. I'm also this is like one of the cooler books that I have. Let's see if I can get this under camera without it being too. I don't think so. There we go. See that? This book is called Right and Reason. 1,050 Jewish customs and their sources. I have had, over the years, people have asked me questions about certain customs that Jews have and what we do, and they've been asking me, and some of these, I'll tell you the truth, I haven't even heard them. And customs, depending on where you are, can vary. Customs in some places, if you do it long enough, overrides halacha, which in itself is a topic of another discussion. But this book, Right and Reason, is wonderful. We have a holiday it's Rosh Chodesh is tonight, and we have Rosh Chodesh is a new month, the month of Av, and there is a discussion in here on the holiday of Tisha B'Av. And towards the end, I'll give you a little bit of insight into this holiday that starts next week, if I'm not mistaken, on the 30th. Right? Yeah, on the 30th. Allergies? Okay. I will later. Huh? Of course you are. So Dreidel has a night off, Mike? I don't know what that means. Oh yeah, Rosh Chodesh, of course, she has tomorrow off. And it's a fast day for guys until noon. It's a mini Yom Kippur. And then we have the holiday 9 days later. There's a whole set of things that we're not supposed to do. You're not supposed to wash clothes. There's a lot of things you're not supposed to do in the next 9 days leading up to Tisha B'Av. So if we have some time, which I hope we will, we'll get into that a little bit, just kind of FYI stuff, because I know people always ask, and so I figured I'd share a bit of information. And Oki and Larry, my daughter has got one last phone call to make, and your tickets will be in the mail. God willing, before the end of the weekend, it's a done deal. You'll be flying out of Wichita, if I'm not... you arrive in Bakersfield like around 6:30 at night. So it's soon. So in case you didn't know what I was talking about, Oki and her hubby are coming out for a week visit. So the 4th of August, they'll get to see how I do class. And because they'll be sitting right here. You're already packing? Oh, lordy. So they'll be out here, and I hope to heck our weather breaks a little bit, but... it should be fascinating. I think the most fun they're going to have is surfing our library, and Shabbos should be a real hoot. Shabbos should be a real hoot. So, she's coming out to visit. So, it should be very interesting. I'm the chulent maker. I'm the chillant maker. At 111 degrees, I don't make much chillant. No, I do the cooking. My wife is, in case everybody doesn't know, my wife is works full time. No, my wife works full time and is a full time student, and so I do the cooking. And as soon as she's done with school and she has her new career underway, she can cook, or I'll be her sous chef. But yeah, we have a ton of chillant. I make a meatball chillant, which my wife just thinks is just excellent. And if you don't know what chillant is kind of a crock-potted dish that you have on Shabbos, part of a hot meal. Yeah, it's very good. Yeah, meatball chillant is really killer. Okay, any other questions before we move on? This is kind of an interesting little aside for 30 minutes. It's kind of enjoyable. But Larry and Pam coming out here, it is going to be a scream. It should be really a lot of fun. And I can almost guarantee Pam will jump into our library and we won't see her for a week. Well, I said, tell Pam she could take the pictures. Then upload them and put them on the net, This is Rabbi Dove flying through the air this way. This is Rabbi Dove flying through the air. Yeah, it's cool. Okay. Yep, we have a digital camera, so maybe we'll take some pictures too. Flying rabbi, yeah. I was talking to somebody who's doing some skydiving or something insane like that. They said, "Hey, Rabbi, you want to do some skydiving?" I don't jump out of a perfectly good airplane for anybody, any way, shape, or form. That will not happen. I guarantee it. Would I jump out of an airplane for you? Will you go with me? You'll go first? Are you serious? You'd skydive. You really would? No, I'm asking you. Would you skydive? You're afraid of heights. That would be cool. Let me see you jump out of an airplane at 12,000 feet. Okay. You'd hear the longest free fall and expletive on the planet, I'll tell you what. 10,000 feet, I would just be one solid scream. Yeah, well, okay, these are the stories. All right, let's get going. Hey, when you have a second, my dear, can I have some more of this blue stuff? Top shelf in the fridge. Okay, it'll be screaming. Be screaming. Why didn't we know this? Why wasn't this published in English? Just wondering, Rabbi, if you could refer to a local rabbi here in Toronto, so I could attend a Jewish service in a synagogue, because I'm no longer attending church. In Toronto, I would, Luisito, I would Google a synagogue in Toronto. Google Toronto synagogues, and you'll get something. I could do it, but you can. I mean, if you're online, you're obviously able to do that. So I would minimize the screen, leave your speakers up, and Google synagogues Toronto. A very good friend of mine, who teaches in the virtual yeshiva, lives in Toronto. Rabbi Eli Rock, who has the Jewish home, he lives in Toronto. So there are a lot of Yidden, and there's a lot of Noahides in Toronto. So Lucita, you got it made. You got a little your own little group there. Ooh, thank you. Okay. We're having the Pat Brockman. I haven't seen her forever. You okay? Batista. Go online and get it, right? Oh, okay. Go online. Okay. All right, let's get going. We are in the section of who is doing that laser thing? color in your little laser dot. There you go. Oopsie. Okay, we're in the prohibition of blasphemy. I'm on page 280. Number 10. And again, what I do is people have said, oh, he just reads out of the book. Yes, I do just read out of the book, but I also explain it because sometimes some of the terminology needs to be elucidated a little bit so you can follow along. Will they allow me to attend the service even if I'm not a Jew? Why not? Of course you can. It's not like clothes. You don't have to have a card to get in the door. There is a religion out there where you have to have a card to get in the door and all that stuff. Which one? Yeah, it should be okay. Yeah, Luisito in PM with Okioki and Luisito will get together and take care of some business. Good, Omar, very good. Very good. Okay, see, this is great. With me? Oh, man, you putting that picture up, dude? Oh, man. With Tefillin and Talis. That's that real spaced out one in Yeshiva of me. Yeah, I know. Okay. One who swears of his own accord or one who hears an oath announced by others and he affirms his acceptance by answering amen has made a vow and must keep his word. Since anyone who affirms a vow by answering amen is as if he himself made a vow. Whether one answers amen or a word that bears the same meaning, such as yes, or I am obligated in this vow, or I accept this vow, or any phrase that has the same meaning, one becomes bound by the vow which he affirms. What is this? Oh, Luisito, man, don't be afraid. Oh, no, you'll love it. You'll absolutely love it. No, I don't mind chesed. I don't mind at all. Luisito, you'll be fine. You will just be fine. 11. So in essence, 10 is, let's suppose somebody swears, I, Bleenator, I promise I'll be at your house at 6 o'clock to help you move all your stuff from this house to the next house. And you go, okay, I am too, or amen. You're obligated. You have to. As an example, my daughter's moving today, and she's got a couple friends to help her move. Sure, why not? So I wish them well. Sorry, guys, I got class. I can't go help you move. My daughter's moving from one place to another. You know, kids. 11. I'm on page, again, 280. It is forbidden to swear in vain. For no purpose at all, whether one swears in God's name or a term referring to him, which is a desecration of his name and is tantamount to swearing falsely in his name, even if a person swears in vain but not in God's name, he will at least profane his words. 12. What is the definition of swearing in vain? Very good question. This is one of the following four types of vows. A. One who swears about a known thing in which there exists what? Oh, that's me. Oh, that's you. That's us. You shrink it down and put it on there or something. My wife's looking at pictures of me to put up on the screen. Oh yeah, put me one of me in my real rabbi garb so when people look at this they go, oh, that's what he looks like. Looks just like me, doesn't it? She has the red eyes, how cool is that? Oh, there I am. That's a good picture. It's easily distracted. Okay. It is forbidden to swear in vain. Okay, here's what the four areas are. One who swears about a known thing in which there exists no doubt to its truth, like one who swears that a stone is a stone, included in this category are those who hurry to swear when there is no true need for an oath. So in other words, let's suppose you're a student going to school tomorrow. Or some other example. That's a very simple. Hey, Devorah. Something that you normally always do. You don't need. Every Sunday morning you mow the lawn. I promise I'm going to do the lawn. You really shouldn't have to. You should not make an oath. And today you make an oath and you kind of put your honor, etc., on the line. As an example, if you're in front of the Beis Din and you have taken something of somebody's and held on to it, and that thing you're holding on to, let's suppose it's the rake or something like that, and you got your rake and it's locked up in whatever, and all of a sudden something happens where it's gone. You don't know what happened to it, and you would go in front of a Beis Din. I'm flashing? Wow, that's creepy. That you took good care of it and it wasn't your fault. Then there's a whole discussion within the Beis Din what you have to do. But in something like that, if you're in front of a Beis Din, yes, you would swear to affirm something. But if you're out talking to your friends and let's suppose your friend is talking to you on the telephone and you're about to leave work and your friend says, hey, do you mind stopping by and picking me up a quart of milk? And you say, sure. You're not doing an oath. And if Chas V'Shalom something happens, you're not in trouble. So the bottom line is don't make an oath unless it's in an appropriate time and place. Okay? Is that clear? I hope. B, one who swears about a matter which is known as false. Chas V'Shalom. Like swearing that a man is a woman or a stone is gold, which is not only false but needs no verification. C, one who swears to do something which he has no power to accomplish, like swearing not to sleep for 3 consecutive days and nights, or not to eat for 7 days, or to sleep or eat without giving a time frame for his vow, which implies that the vow exists forever. Utters a vow in vain, since he will surely not be able to keep it. Lordy, who is that handsome guy? Oh, it's me. Who did that? Is that my wifey doing that? Oh. Look deep into my eyes. There, someone wants to know what I look like? There I am. I got my payas over here. I got my Brandolino. Not a borsa, it's a Brandolino. This is my Bekesha. And my tie and my, you see this little thing by my tie? That's my Arbakanfa. So that's what I look like. I think I like this better. If you put them side by side, this is kind of cool. That's my official rabbi uniform. What? No, I have it here. Look. See? I have my video up, but I put my video beside me, and I look just like me. It's kind of cool how that works. Yep. What's on my tie? My son gave me that tie for my birthday. My son works in a place where he does photography. And he actually took a picture of himself in his Purim outfit and put it on the tie and gave me the tie. So I wore the tie. That's what it is. That my son is actually on the tie. Yeah, it is. I thought it was pretty cool. They can do that today. You know, you can put your mug on a mug. You know, I can put my mug on here. Or I can put it, you know, wherever. Yeah, on my tie is my son. Back to page 80. Yes, ma'am. Slave driving wife, you betcha. Okay, 13. I'm on page 281. A person should not swear on the actions of others that they will or will not do a future action, since he does not have the power to keep his words and they are not bound by his vow, unless they agree to his words in the manner ascribed above in topic 10, that's where we started. A man who swears to marry a woman or vice versa is not considered to have uttered a vain oath, since the intention is such that if a second person consents, then the first person would be obligated to keep the vow. When this happens, the first person does become bound by an oath. Likewise, in any case where one person swears on condition that a second person will do something, this oath is not in vain, is binding as soon as the condition is met. Well, that's from Yeridaya. That's from the Rama. 14, it is permitted, this is great, it is permitted for a Gentile to swear to keep one of the seven Noahide commandments, even though he's already obligated to them, since he sees this as a necessary vow in order to encourage himself to keep the commandment. What would be an example of what? What am I missing? It is permitted for a Gentile to swear to keep one of the seven? Okay, 13. Okay, let me go back to 13. Okay, the last part. A person should not swear on the actions of others that they will or will not do a future action, since he does not have the power to keep his words and they are not bound by his vow. And that part is very simple. I cannot vow that Francis will go over to Okie's house and mow her lawn. I can't do that. Because I'm making a vow for somebody else to do something else. Okay? So for her to travel all the way from Australia to Oklahoma to do her lawn and to fly home is it not only not practical, but I can't make a vow for that. Okay? Unless they agree to his words in a manner described in 10. So, again, here we go. In number 10, if I make a vow on somebody else's behalf, if I say, without a vow, if I say, Francis will be doing Oki's lawn this weekend, and Francis says, okay, you got it, she is obligated to do it. So, if you'll hear coming out of my mouth, or you'll hear what you'll see when I type, I will do this. See that? BLN? That is Blinator. Bli. Blinator is without a nader, without a vowel. And so I would be very careful on one of my favorite rabbis is the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim, people who first met him thought he was very slow of speech. But Chofetz Chaim was very, very, very careful and very, very deliberate in everything he said. So the point is, what comes out of your mouth is very important, and you need to be very, very careful what comes out for many, many reasons. Words can do a tremendous amount of damage. Words can do a tremendous amount of good. Just like actions. And sometimes what comes out of your mouth sometimes is worse than what a sharp object could do. As in a contract, Alan? If I write a contract, No, actually, in something like this, let's suppose it's something important. A promissory note. Okay, Alan? You have a promissory note. You promise to pay Francis three chickens by Friday or something like that. And you go in front of a notary public and you write it out in a promissory note. That's a legal binding document. So the answer is, what about writing? Writing is conveying a promise. If you're going to write something down, you will or will not do it. I owe you $20. And you write it down, you hand it to me. I owe you $20, signed Alan. Oh, Alan's wifey. Okay. Did that help you, Alan? Alan's wifey? She gets your own nick. Now I know who I'm talking to. Got that? Did I answer your question? I hope. Yes, no, maybe, who knows? My name is Heather. Okay, I didn't see something about a journal. Let me go back and see what a journal said. Hi, Heather. I didn't see a journal question. What was your journal question? Heather, you could get your own nick, you know. You don't have to use Alan's. Just under you. I was thinking of a journal. Journaling isn't the same thing. When you journal, you're not necessarily promising to do or not to do something, if I'm not mistaken. People who journal have a tendency to take what's in their head and, for whatever reason, good, bad, or ugly, they put it down on paper and they hold on to it. And sometimes it's, what do they call that, free flow writing. There's a whole bunch of different types of writing. If you're doing any type of therapy, your therapist may say, I want you to keep a journal and tell me how you feel under this condition, under hell, that condition. If you're doing some brainstorming, there's a project you want to do, and you just might write everything down. That's not necessarily a promise. You're not making a vow in a journal. Heather, but if you are going to write down on a piece of paper that you're going to babysit for somebody else this weekend and you shoot them an email, you're obligated. Like tomorrow. I'm home during the summer. Guess who's babysitting? I babysat twice last week. I'm babysitting tomorrow. How cool is that? What do I do during the day? I babysit for Munchkins. I got a 4-year-old and a 9-year-old coming over. Should be interesting. Any other questions? Oh yeah, it's fun. It's a blast. Oh, okay. You may get here in time for a major, major celebration. Oh, I always have fun. Kids are great. I babysat for this 8-year-old last week. November Foster. Now, this kid, this young lady who you may have heard of over the years, she's a cancer survivor. At age 2.5, she was diagnosed with leukemia. And she went through all the batteries of chemo and everything, and I kind of went with her and her mom through this, and she would come over after a round of chemo. Little kid would come over, get in the pool for a few minutes. I'd feed her dinner, and she'd crash out on the couch. And her mom and I would have long talks about this. Well, to make a long story short, she ended up with last year a bone marrow transplant. And she got like 300% of the normal, and it all took. And she is a normal 8-year-old. There's some areas in her education that are a little bit lacking that we're working on. I'm helping her out, a little tutoring. But in short, this kid is good to go. And every year she goes back for a checkup. She's got to go over to the coast, one of the hospitals over there where she had her, I think it's up north, south of San Francisco. the children's hospital up there. But she got, normally they get whatever it is amount of bone marrow, because they have to kill all her old bone marrow off, which is just, I can't even believe what this little 8-year-old's already been through in her short 8 years of life. But they killed off all her bone marrow, and the donor gave over 300% of normal. It was like a phenomenal amount. It was a phenomenal amount of bone marrow. So thank God her leukemia is gone. And I've known this little girl since she was 2 and a half. So, yeah. So I got to babysit for her twice last week. You know, one of those 8-year-olds that dress themselves, put on all the flashy jewelry, and wear clothes that never matches? Very nice. Yeah. My uncle is on the Make-A-Wish Foundation for Israel. So, you know, my uncle does that. He's also with the organization called CAMRA. He was the man of the year for them 10 years ago, something like that. And my uncle does philanthropic stuff around the world. Okay. Did I answer your question, Francis? I cut off on a little side there. Did I answer that? You know something, B'nai Noach? If somebody is sending an email to do something, let's suppose B'nai Noach. hang on a second, Francis. B'nai Noach, let's suppose you and I talk on the telephone, and you say, "Hey, Rabbi, you're going to do A, B, C, D. Shoot me an email to remind me." And we've talked about that. I restate what we spoke about. I send an email. As far as I'm concerned, that's as binding. Okay. Does that answer your question? So believe me, if you and I, let's suppose, B'nai Noach, you and I are talking about some sort of agreement, and we have agreement in principles. Let's suppose you're going to do some cement work for me or something like that, and we talk about price, and we're going to A, B, C, D. And I shoot you an email, according to our conversation of July, whatever it is, at such and such a time, you told me you would do A, B, C, D, and I send it to you. You just simply say yes and send it back. We got a contract. It's not as if we sat down and wrote out a contract, but if you're the type of person that, like I was raised, a handshake is your word, and you have this agreement, you're good to go. Okay? What keeps turning off on you? He keeps kicking out of the room? You gonna put a different picture up? Let's put us up. Okay, you don't have to. A broken promise, written or verbal, are directed to anybody are forbidden. A broken promise, written or verbal, which are directed to anybody are forbidden. A broken promise, written or verbal, which are directed to anybody are forbidden. I don't understand that. I think I missed something. A written broken promise, I have a little difficulty with that. If you'll rephrase that, Lucito, where'd that come from? Hey, that's my wifey and I. Ooh, Hanukkah. Hey, look at that little cute little wifey of mine. Yep, that's us. Yes, that's true. What Oki said is true. You got a different one up there? They're doing the pictures. Oh. Yeah, that's cool. Okay, how am I doing with the answers? Is that okay? Promises written or verbal, if not fulfilled, they're not forbidden, Luisito, the problem is making a vow and not following through with it. And what do we have up here? Oh, that's my wife's Chanukiah. Well, that's our Chanukiah. Yeah, that's we have, oh, Lordy. See that one there with the lion on it? If you look up on the shelf, there, whatever it is. I bought that one in 1976 in Sharon, Pennsylvania. And it was my traveling, menorah for over 30 years. I now have a nice little oil one, of course, but when I was traveling way back in the day and going from point A to point B, it's not really convenient and it's not really practical to bring oil or to find oil locally and all the wicks and all that stuff, so you can travel with your box of candles and your menorah. That was my traveling menorah. I bought that in Sharon, Pennsylvania in 1976, a little synagogue gift shop. I don't even know if the synagogue's still there. So if you know where Sharon, Pennsylvania is, and there's a synagogue there, that's where I bought it. Oh, that's me again. and we have several of them. All right. Ooh, boy, I'm all over the place tonight. Oh, we're doing good on time, too. Okay. Lucita, did I answer your question? The best thing to do is not to make a vow. Okay? If you tell someone you're going to do something and just say, hey, you know, just say blenator or say without a vow, I'll be there to help you move. Now, let's suppose this is kind of important. Let's suppose, Luisito, I don't mean to pick on you, but you had a very, very good question. Luisito, let's suppose you have a family member. You keep skipping. Oh, that's too bad. Sorry, Devorah. You're from Pennsylvania? Do you know where Sharon, Pennsylvania is? I'll get you back to you in a second, Luisito. Do you know where Sharon, Pennsylvania is, Devorah? Yes, no, maybe? Oh, I'll get back to her. Anyway, Luisito, the best thing to do is not to make one. Let's, as an example, Luisito, let's suppose you promise your niece that you'll help her move next Monday, and you'll be there at 2:00. I'll be there at 2:00 to help you to move. And something happens. You end up with a flat tire. You end up with your mother-in-law coming over. You end up winning the publisher's clearinghouse sweepstakes, and you're busy jumping around your front yard, and you don't make it over. The problem is you've made a vow, and if you look in Torah, making a vow is very, very important. Yeah, what you could do is say, hey, you know something, I'll be there. Blenator, I'll be there. Without a vow, I will be there to help you. And, you're talking to a family member, a good friend, and they know if something comes up, you call them on the phone and say, hey, I'll be 20 minutes late. And that way, you're not violating a vow. Because vows are very, 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 very important. And you have to be very careful how you use them. Okay? Hopefully that... If you're promising, yeah, good. Okay. Beat that one to death, didn't I? 14. It is permitted for a Gentile to swear to keep one of the seven commandments even though he's already obligated to them. Since he sees this as necessary vow in order to encourage himself to keep the commandment. So it's kind of like saying, I won't commit blasphemy. And you make a promise. Hey, that's a good one. I promise not to eat the limb of a living creature. That's an easy one. And people say, well, that's kind of silly. Why are you doing that? Well, if it reinforces what you're doing or want to do, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. One who intends to swear and resolves a certain matter in his heart, but does not actually voice the commitment, is not bound by it as a vow. That's a good one. Likewise, if one resolved in his heart to prohibit himself from doing a certain action and erred and mentioned another vow which he did not intend, like one who intends to swear not to eat with person A and erred and voiced a promise not to eat with person B, may still eat with both of them, as one is only bound by a vow which he both intends and voices in accordance. But resolve alone or an errant spoken vow is not binding. What that means, very simply, let's suppose Chesed and Bnei Noach. Chesed and Bnei Noach are sitting in a room. And I say, I'm not going to eat with Chesed anymore. But I say, instead of Chesed, I say Bnei Noach. But I meant the other one. I made a mistake. It's not binding. Just what it said in that number right there. One resolved in his heart not to eat bread made from wheat and then swore not to eat bread without specifying the type. He's only forbidden to eat wheat bread, as his heart and mouth were alike on this matter. In contrast, of course it comes down to intent, yes. Devorah is back, yay. In contrast, if one swears or says, I swear such and such with your consent, he cannot say that he had other thoughts in mind, since his heart and spoken words were in accordance with the oath, that the oath would depend on the consent of others. Therefore, this is a complete vow, and the consent of others take the place of his consent. So hopefully that was clear. Oh, poor Dvorla. She's having difficulties. Yeah, me too. Okay. 16. I'm getting down to the end of the section. If one swears or promises and then rescinds his oath in a short period of time and says, I regret it, or this is not a vow, or I have considered and I like and the like, then the vow is not binding. This is comparable to one who made a mistake and did not really have intent in his heart for the vow. So if you're going to say something like, I'm not going to ever eat spinach salad again, and you go, oh, no, man, I like spinach salad. I'm not going to do that, and you take it back that quickly. I think it's a horrible habit to get into, personally. I really think that it is in your best interest to be cognizant and to be very careful what leaves your mouth. I really think it's important. Because so many people willy-nilly toss words out of their mouth and toss them around. And words can do great good or great harm. And sometimes there are people who are flinging words, like it says in the Gemara, in Brechos, page 32, I think, bottom of the page, was talking about Chana, and it's talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. We're heading into Devarim. And Moshe Rabbeinu was flinging his words at heaven, about to knock down heaven's door when God told him, enough, stop. Chana, in the book of Shmuel, was flinging her words at heaven. She wanted to have a baby so bad. So what you say and how you say it has a lot of power. My strongest suggestion to those of you out there that have become righteous Gentiles is to be very aware of what leaves your mouth. One thing that makes me a wee bit crazy, but I know everybody in here knows someone who does it. Somebody will say something to you a little bit on the ridiculous side or a little bit on the mean or hateful side and say, oh, I didn't really mean it. Well, my question to them is, why'd you say it? So the point being, be careful. Be very thoughtful when you say something. Or that exactly, okay. Oh, just joking. Oh, that hat makes your head look like a pinhead. Oh, just joking. That's a mean thing to say. You know? Or you're wearing your do-rag on sideways. You look like a pirate. Uh-huh, just kidding. You know, those things that come out of your mouth can do a tremendous amount of damage. It's like somebody who is vowing a vow and then taking it back. Just be careful. Yeah, it doesn't soften anything. Someone looks at you and say, hey, I like my do-rag. It's hard to find. I'll get like a... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So once the damage is done, it's like the story about the guy and who did Lashon Hora on this rabbi, and the rabbi told him how he could fix it. Sometimes you just can't. Yeah. Oof, what you got? She's cute. Is that good? Yummy. There's some of your beans in there. Oh, yeah, buddy. Well, when they come out, we're going to make those beans for... Oh, yeah, my wife has learned how to make some beans, and we've talked about that already. Okay, let's keep going. 17. Oh, Lucito's typing something. Wow, that's a pretty good one, my wifey said. Okay, 17. Likewise, if others told him, reconsider it, or this is not binding for you, and he verbally accepts the words immediately in a short time period defined above by saying, yes, or I regret it, the vow is not binding. If he waits longer than this amount of time, he may not rescind his vow. You know something, Lucito? Wow, that's pretty... You gotta, Luisito, you gotta get the movie, Ushpizin. From personal experience, anger, once upon a time I did anger pretty well. As big as I am, I do anger pretty well. And in school, you know, playing football and all that stuff, I played baseball, played football, all that stuff. You know, my wife played baseball too, she just told me. Oki's going to drink our mystery juice. She's going to drink our Johnny Benches. Well, so much for Johnny Bench. So anyway, in the pit of anger, you could say something you really don't mean. This is, I think, one very easy way to get yourself out of the habit of doing that. I don't know, Louis, you don't remember. Are you married with kids? I forget. But if you have children... As an example, children get to really mimic us and to really, really give us an insight into ourselves. If you have a child who says something to one of their siblings or something like that, wow, your hair looks ridiculous today, just kidding, that's a teachable moment as a parent. If you have a friend who does something similar to that, you know that one you just kind of want to smack in the back of the head because he says things, then he says, oh, I was just kidding. Somebody like that. And also, anger is a very dangerous emotion because things come out of your mouth that you really can't take back. Some people say count to 10. That's a topic of another discussion, anger. Because you learn a lot about yourself and you can do a lot of damage to yourself just being angry. Yeah. You need a vent for that kind of anger. So it can't stay inside, you'll blow up, but you got to vent it in a way that you won't do more harm to yourself. As an example, if you're so angry about something, let's suppose you're one of those road ragers out there, and during your little bout of road rage, you say some things that you normally wouldn't say. But that stuff's out of your mouth because you're grabbing hold of your steering wheel, whipping that dude back and forth and screaming at somebody who just cut you off. And you look ridiculous. You have to learn to deal with those emotions. Go to the woods and find a tree and yell at it. I just take a pillow and scream into it. It's cool. I don't do well with anger, and I find one of the biggest pitfalls is an anger inspired by a perceived, underline that word, perceived injustice. MJS. Those of you who have become righteous Gentiles have seen the world through a different set of eyes, especially those of you that have been studying this for a very long time. And a perceived injustice is either actual or perceived in your own mind. Because what happens is some of the injustices that I see is filtered through Jewish thought. And what may be perfectly fine with the non-Jews in the world doesn't work for me. Just doesn't work. And it's not really fair to... it's dangerous. But MJS, you betcha, a perceived injustice according to what we see and what we feel and our own sense of justice. Yeah, I agree with you. It's very difficult, but who rules who? Yes. Yeah, I did. Okay, anything else before I keep going? Because I want to get over to, I want to do the right and reason in the Midrash. Ooh, I'm at the end of this section. There is a type of vow that is not made through speech, but is committed through action. Uh-oh. In a community where this action is accepted as a vow, and this oath is binding with all the rules of a vow, for example, in places where a vow is communicated by an action at the time of the declaration, for example, shaking hands, perfect. Raising the right hand. Or placing one hand on a Hebrew Bible. I like that there's a Hebrew Bible in here. Then these actions are considered vows. So if you're in court and you know you're going to be testifying, you know, you can kind of get hold of the bailiff and say, you know, can we use this book instead of that one, and et cetera. And there are some places that will let you testify without making a vow. But it's not necessarily a bad thing. However, in places where businessmen commonly shake hands over a business deal, this is only considered an informal agreement, and an endorsement of the deal is not considered to be a vow. So when you shake hands on a deal, okay, well, no, I'm going to sell you this car, and you shake hands, then you go in and you sign your paperwork. Yeah, truckies are dangerous. Let's do a little bit more. Let's get into the next chapter 4 of this. Ooh, wait a second. I can go a little further than that. Chapter 4. I think I'm going to get through this section, too. Then we'll discuss some other stuff. You okay? Your mom does what? Slow down? Yes, dear. Okay, here we go. Annulment of vows and promises and vows made according to the public's understanding. Ooh, this is a good one. If one makes a vow, or a promise to do a certain thing or not to do so, and then he regrets his vow, wow, and decides that he will be distressed if he holds himself into keeping it, or something occurs later which he did not foresee, he considers his promise or vow because of this, then he should request annulment of the vow. Once his vow becomes annulled, he's allowed to do a thing that he swore not to do, or he does not have to do a thing he promised to do. Even if he swore to the promise by God's name, he may request annulment of a vow. And this should be hopeful. I wonder if it goes into the details on how. We'll see. It has been explained in the previous chapter that a person should not rush to make promises or vows. Amen. Be very careful. If one has already done so, he should keep his word and not annul his vow. He should endure distress to uphold what he swore verbally rather than annul the oath. For anyone who swears and then annuls his vow is like a liar. There's nothing better than a good name. Only if one sees that the vow he uttered has caused him much distress, or if it becomes a stumbling block or causes him or others to sin, he should then have the vow annulled. If one cannot, here we go. I was wondering if they're going to have this. If one cannot annul his own vow, rather others must annul it for him. Even one person can annul another person's vow, provided he is knowledgeable in the precepts regarding the annulment of vows, and he knows what is considered valid, a valid regret from the outset, and how to find an opening for establishing that the necessary regret is there. Even a friend or relative, as long as they are knowledgeable in these laws, are allowed to annul a vow that a Gentile made. Got that? I personally like the idea of three learned people getting together to annul a vow, personally. But the bottom line, like I said before, like my mother used to say when I was a very little person, double up, put your mind in gear before you put your mouth in motion. What leaves your mouth is important. My mom was a pretty wise person. Well, most moms are. How is an oath annulled? The person who took the oath says before those who are annulling it, I took an oath concerning such and such, and I have changed my mind. If I had known that I would feel so much discomfort concerning this matter, or that such and such a thing would happen to me as a result, I would not have taken the oath. If at the time of my oath, my understanding was as it is now, I would not have made the oath. Wow, I just discovered that if I go to approve an email at Yahoo Groups, the video with Rabbi Dove comes with me. Ooh, that's creepy. I'm following Francis. Really? Oh, that's scary. You guys crack me up. You guys are great. You guys are great. Those who are annulling the oath say, this is important, if you make a vow and you regret it, this is how you undo that which you did. So it's kind of important. I'm glad those of you that are recording this are recording it, because this is kind of a biggie. Those who are annulling the oath say to him, say to the person who has made the oath, have you already changed your mind? He answers, yes. They tell him, the thing is permitted for you, or the promise is released for you, or the like, with the intent in any language. Yes. Right there. Page 285, number 4. But I'm sure there's more to it. I want to see. Where are the cracks? I don't know what you just... Okay, guys. If it doesn't say it, I'm going to add my 2 cents to the end of this, because I'm sure it's going to. Oof, I won't get through this week, will I? Nope. Okay, I'm going to go back to this next week, because this is a very good spot. Yes. So I'm going to go back and do this next week. I will start Bleenator next. See, I just did it. See? I will start next week Bleenator. Did you, everybody hear I said that? It's on tape. So I said that. I will start next week Bleenator on page 284, number 1, chapter 4, the annulment of vows. Now, one thing I'm going to add my 2 cents in, and I haven't read ahead to find out what it says about this. is, let's suppose you make a vow and you go, oh man, I can't do that. It's just not possible. It's too big for me. Let's suppose you make a vow to do the entire book of Psalms every single day. Okay, you make that vow. Because Psalms are so cool and it means so much to you. You say you're going to do it every single day, and you make that vow. And you realize this, you're just not going to have the time in the day to do it. Take a long time to do that. And you really want to do, well, I want to do it really in a week. Or I really want to do it in a month. So you go to somebody, and you go to, in my opinion, I would go to three people. And I would tell them what you regret, and they'll say, do you regret it? Just like it said in that chapter. But when you have your vow annulled, you cannot turn around and make that same vow again. That's a no-no. So if I go in front of a Beis Din and get a vow annulled, I had better not go back and make the same mistake again. Now, if it's at all possible, Oki, I would say three people at the same time, because you're forming, in essence, a kind of a court. That would be the safest thing to do. But if you go to somebody, an individual, because there's not a, you don't have a whole community around, and that's all you have, you go to one person and you say it in front of them, then you're good. So I would prefer in front of three, but depending on the community you're in. Some of you don't, the closest Noahide is 1,000 miles away, so it'd be a little bit more difficult. Okay. It is coming up on 7:30. This is where I usually jump into the Midrash Says, and or the Torah portion. And I also have this book, Right and Reason. Now, where are we in our history? Where are we in Torah? We are in the beginning. Hang on a second. Would it count if we had a virtual meeting to annul a vow because of our distances? How cool would that be? Yeah, you know something? Yeah, I could... You mean like on Skype or something like that, and we have actually video talking back and forth and stuff like that, and you make that in front of me? Yeah. And we don't do that thing, I have my fingers crossed. No. Okay, that would be cool. Now that we have this technology, of course. But the best way, in my opinion, three people. If you can't do that, one person. If you want to do it in front of me, give me a holler. We'll go up on Skype or go up on this, and we'll do it to it. Okay. Well, you know something, Rebecca, I kind of like the look in the face. When you're looking at me and saying, I'm sorry, I regret that, I'd like to see it on video. And you can download Skype and you can get up, well, if you got a camera, or you can come in here and do it. Just come up here and do it. That's cool. Well, they're cheap. You go to Radio Shack and pick one up. They're real cheap. Yeah, video would be the best. Okay, any other questions before we jump into the Varam? Hey, what happened to Chesed? Dude, Chesed left. Something I said? I don't know. Okay, where are we in our travels? He left a long time ago. See, I'm not paying attention. Oh, yeah, his son is coming over. That's right. He told me, he PM'd me that earlier. All right. We are at the beginning of the last book of Torah. In essence, this book was supposed to be the epilogue. This is Moses' last day. Wrapping things up, as it were. We have... As the Midrash says, which I thought this was kind of interesting. Let me go over this. This is one thing that I love about this book. There's a great forward in here. Let me get past this. In the introduction to this book, I was looking at this tonight, and I thought it was kind of fascinating. The order of the five books of Torah. I know in other study groups, they have a tendency to take something out of Torah, match it up with something in the prophets or writings, haul that into whatever their particular Bible is, and they come up with whatever they come up with. It never really gives you Torah in context. You can take anything out of context, and you can prove anything you want. That's very simple. But if you take a look at the order of the five books of Torah, the book of Bereshit, the book of Genesis, this book, and I'm going to go over this, I'm sure most of you know this, but maybe you haven't thought about this quite this way before, and that's the reason why I'm presenting it. The book of Genesis, this book introduces the other books of Torah by establishing fundamentals of our faith. Genesis is fundamentals. It first reveals that the Creator made the universe from nothing, ex nihilo, which is fascinating. God in the divine mind made something from absolute nothing. We can, and I've discussed this before, we have the ability to form a picture in our mind. Let's suppose you're a woodworker and you form the idea of a table you want to build in your mind, and you go get yourself some wood and you work it, and it turns out. We've made something in our mind and we've brought it to physicality. God can take from nothing, where we need that wood, he takes nothing and makes something. That's ex nihilo. It's remarkable. We learn other fundamentals of faith from the narratives in the book of Bereshit. God speaks to man. It is related that he spoke to Adam, Noah, and our forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The Almighty rewards the righteous and punishes the wicked. That's very, very, very true. As when he expelled Adam and Eve from the Garden of Eden because they sinned, and when he drowned the wicked generation in the flood but saved the righteous Noah, and so on. The book of Genesis portrays the deeds of our founders, of our people, the great tzaddikim, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and his sons. Okay, that's the purpose of Genesis. Exodus. The book of Shemos means names. While Sefer Bereshit, and I love this introduction, depicts the lives of individual tzaddikim, individual righteous people, giants of their times, the book of Shemos concentrates on our people's national history. The slavery in Egypt, the redemption, the consequent acceptance of Torah at Mount Sinai, the building of the Mishkan, the tabernacle. Since the central event of the book of Shemos is the Exodus, our sages also called it the book of exile and redemption. I think I like that better than Exodus. The book of exile and redemption. The third book is the book of Vayikra, and some people refer to this as the sacrificial cult. This is the book for Levites. This is the middle of Torah. The book of Vayikra, the third book, teaches the laws of the sacrifice and the laws pertaining to the sanctuary. It is mainly addressed to the Kohanim and the Levi'im. If you're a Kohen or a Levite, this book's for you. The sages named it Torah HaKohanim, the book of laws concerning the Kohanim. When it does address the people, it instructs them in laws that concern the sanctuary and admonishes them to maintain the supreme level of holiness that is a prerequisite for the divine presence remaining in their midst. So in this book, we are taught what to do to keep the divine presence with us rather than chase it away. And, whew, boy, we do that really well sometimes, don't we? This third book logically follows Shamos, which concludes with the account of the Mishkan's construction. That's the end of Shamos is the last parshas in there is the construction of the tabernacle. Leviticus is setting up the Kohanim for what they're supposed to do and what the Levites are supposed to do. It's got the holiness code right smack in the middle of the 19th chapter. Sixth verse talks about Lashon Hara, gossip. Now, the book of Bamidbar, which is, like I mentioned when we started that book, that one, in my humble opinion, is a book that when you first go through it, you just kind of want to skip through it because there's so much repetition. But when you see all the repetition like we talked about before, take a look at why and how things are the same and how things are different. And that's why the Stone Edition is so good because of the commentaries. The book of Bamidbar, recording the wanderings of the Jews in the wilderness. This book details their manner of traveling, the names of their stations, and the people's trials and hardships in the wilderness. The sages entitled it the Book of Numbers because it repeatedly mentions the number of Bnei Israel. Most of the laws mentioned in Sefer Bamidbar apply to the generation of the wilderness. But it also contains some laws concerning the sacrifices, most of which complement those mentioned in the book of Leviticus. Now the book of Devarim. This was supposed to be an epilogue. This book was originally supposed to be a Moses' last day, Moses' last discussion to the children of Israel before he's gathered. And remarkably so, there's 200 mitzvahs that you find in this book. And I just, when I first read that, I go, wow, this is amazing. It's supposed to be an epilogue. It's supposed to be the final day of our greatest teacher's life. And there's 200 more mitzvahs in it. The book of Devarim, also entitled Mishnah Torah. This is Mishnah Torah. The review of the Torah. That's what it's meant to be. This book nevertheless teaches more than 70 new mitzvahs. According to my book over there, there's like 200 in there. Moses addresses Devarim to the generation that would reach Eretz Yisrael. He therefore repeatedly emphasized the commandment against idol worship. Boy, he warned us on that one. He therefore repeatedly emphasized idol worship to warn the Jews not to imitate the practices of the non-Jewish nations in Eretz Canaan, but to remain loyal to the Torah. Sefer Devarim forecasts future punishments for forsaking the Torah, one of the worldwide dispersions of the Jewish people. It concludes by predicting the ultimate redemption. Thus, the history cycle that began with creation is coming complete. When were the five books committed to writing? The Gemara in Gittin 60a gives two views. After teaching Moses an individual Torah passage, the Almighty immediately dictated its composition. Moses recorded each parsha as soon as he learned it. Before his death, Moses sold all the individual parchments together and obtained a complete Torah scroll. The second one in Gittin, during the years in the wilderness, Moses learned and taught the Torah orally. He put it into writing only at the end of the 40th year according to the Almighty's dictation. That's the other one. In this Torah portion, Moses assembles the children of Israel to remind them whence they came, as they say. He goes through and he tells them the great good that was done for them, the coming out of Egypt, the major mistakes that we had been part of, e.g. the golden calf incident, the building of the tabernacle, the sin of the spies, the dedication of the tabernacle, what went on with the Midianites, Pinchas, the war with the Midianites that just finished, which in the last 2 weeks Torah portion, if you remember, Moses was told to do battle with the Midianites and what he was supposed to do, and it goes into great detail. The marvelous side of that was Moses ran to do the mitzvah. God said to go do it, and off he went to do it. Moses knew that right after he finished the battle with the Midianites, that was it. He was done. He was done. He was done. His job in the end was to write down everything in Torah, put that in the ark, and he was going to be gathered. There's a whole lot about the last hours of Moses' life in the Midrash, which we will get to as the weeks go on. Hello again. The wifey just came back. She was out running around doing something. And we will get to that. This is Moses' last day. We're going to get to the part where he puts half the people on one mountain, half the people on the other, and the Kohanim with the ark and everything in the middle, and blessings and curses and all of that stuff. And we'll get to the last one where Moses is finally gathered. And that's at the end of Devarim. And at the end of Devarim, we have a little party called Simcha Torah, which is in October sometime. And we dance around with the Torah, and we start over again. It's beautiful. It is really a wonderful holiday. Okay, let me set this aside. And I have been asked questions about this as late. This is not... Uh-oh, where is it? Is it 551? Yeah. This is not a holiday that righteous Gentiles do. This is a holiday that we do. But it's significant enough to give you some of the customs and to give you some of the traditions behind this holiday called Tisha B'Av, the ninth day of the Hebrew month of Av. This time in our travel, let's take it from the Torah perspective first. We traveled 40 years in the wilderness. Why do we travel 40 years in the wilderness? Sin of the golden calf, and the entire generation that was part of that was to die off. Men. Women who left Egypt actually went into the promised land because, as we all know, women were not part of the sin of the golden calf. Remember, the men went to the wives, the sons and the daughters, give me your gold earrings, and they blew them off, you know, get out of here. They made the golden calf, the men died. Well, they're on the border of Canaan, and Moses is about to spend his last day, and the people were kind of saying, well, that's the end of 40 years. So what they would do around that time, Midrash says this. They would dig a hole, the men would climb into the hole, go to sleep, and the ones that woke up the next day climbed out of the hole, the other one covered it over. Well, along the lines of the 9th of Av through the 15th of Av, people didn't die. And they stayed in those holes from the 9th to the 15th, as one tradition says. And by the 15th of Av, they knew that they were done and ready to go into the land. That's one part of it. The other part of it is the saddest day of the Jewish calendar. The walls of Jerusalem were breached, the destruction of the first temple, second temple, the Shoah, the plans for the final solution, all of this was done in and around the 9th of Av. So it is the saddest day of the Jewish calendar. However, we also have a tradition, and this is where you wonderful people come in. We also have a very strong tradition that the Messiah is to be born on the 9th of Av, which is next week, 9 days from now. That is, I think, the most wonderful part. So we will be taking now the saddest day of the year, which is a fast day. I'm going to go over some of the traditions of what we do this week and next week. We are eventually going to take the saddest day of the Jewish calendar. Eventually, it'll be the happiest day because the 9th of Av is when the Mashiach is born, and may he be revealed in our time. Okay? Got that? Everybody, one and all? I bet you some of you didn't know that. The date will eventually end up... eventually, when the Mashiach is revealed, his birthday is the 9th of Av. And if you notice, in the month of Cheshvan, which is right after Rosh Hashanah in Tishri, Cheshvan, there are no Jewish holidays. We don't have any holidays right after Simchat Torah, etc. Oh yeah, well that's when the third temple gets dedicated, is in that month. That's why we don't have any holidays on it. So those of you who pray for the Messiah, maybe he'll be born this Tisha B'Av, my mouth to God's ears. Okay. Before Tisha B'Av is the 21 days between the 17th of Tammuz and the 9th of Av are called Between the Narrow Straits. This name was taken from the verse in Echa, Lamentations, her pursuers overtook her between the straits, expression of sorrow, as it says in Psalms, from the straits do I call out to God. Some refrained from eating meat during the 3 weeks between the 17th of Tammuz, which was a fast day, and the 9th of Av. The reason is, and this is why this book is right in reason. It gives you what the custom is, and it gives you the reason behind it. And because of the calamity of the destruction of the temple, from the day the walls of Jerusalem were breached on the 17th of Tammuz, until the temple was burnt on the 9th of Av. That's this between the straits time from the 17th to the 9th. On the 17th of Tammuz, the regular daily sacrifices in the temple ceased, as well as the wine libation. Daniel mourned and did not eat or drink wine during these 3 weeks. Hence, we have that tradition. Some follow the custom to refrain from reciting a Shehecheyanu, the prayer kind of rejoicing, saying, Shehecheyanu. The reason these days are days of calamity and we should not say the brucha, he brought us to this time. And that's a Shehecheyanu we do at the beginning of Hanukkah. Thank God we made it to this time, because we don't want to say that, because this isn't a great time we're coming to. It's coming to the time when the temple was destroyed. It's customary to call the month of Av during the blessing of the month the letters Menachem Av, and that's from the Aruch HaShulchan, and the reason is to emphasize that during this month we need consolation over the rebuilding of the temple, which was destroyed during the month of Av. Menachem alludes to the name of the Mashiach, who according to the Midrash will be born on Tisha B'Av. This symbolizes that the Almighty will comfort the letters of the Hebrew alphabet in Megillas Echa, which is Lamentations. Learning Torah, it is not our custom. it is not our custom to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av, on Erev Tisha B'Av. Some of the custom not to study Torah on Erev Tisha B'Av after midday, but only learn subjects that are permitted. Now, if anybody has any questions, sorry, Rabbi, there are just so few Yidden in the Midbar. Yeah, that's true. Righteous Gentiles are allowed to commemorate the day. It is appropriate that we do, but we are not required to observe it. Well, there's your answer, Bob. See what Larry wrote? Righteous Gentiles are allowed to commemorate the day. I mean, it's going to be a birthday party. You know? This thing is really irritating me. Eventually, we will be celebrating the Mashiach's birthday. There is a prayer in the service from the heart. Oh, how cool is that? Okay, any other questions? Because we're a couple of minutes from Adi Ron again. And if you have any questions, now is the time. Okay, when are you going to start that after the class question and answer time? When is that going to be starting? Where is she? We had talked about that. Oopsie. I didn't say anything. Oh, okay. When do you think you'll start it? Maybe next week. If people stick around after class today, they can do that. And if you need me, just call me. So here's what they were thinking of doing, and I'm going to spill the beans on this one. So if you don't like it, I guess you could just cut me off.